This is Professor Allen, and welcome to the Quarter Bin. In every episode of this podcast, I will summarize, criticize, discuss, and review a single issue from my comic book collection, which I will select at random. Any books from my comic book collection are eligible, as long as I paid no more than 25 cents for them. Were the issues worth 25 cents? Were they bargains at 25 cents? Were they still overpriced? Stay tuned and find out. For this 151st episode of the Quarterbin Podcast, we're looking at Archie 101. From Archie Comics, of course, cover dated June 1959. And that makes this either the oldest or second oldest comic we've ever covered on this show. I say that because it kind of depends how you define it. Now, I did once cover an issue of Blackhawk from 1958. That was back in episode 62, so you think, well, obviously, that's the oldest book, because it's a year earlier than this Archie book, except that I covered that book in 2015, meaning it was 57 years old when I covered it. But this, even though it's from a year later, 1959, is actually 61 years old when I'm covering it. So again, if you want to argue either of those positions, me and my lawyer, Paul Spatero, will take the other side and crush you in court. Anyway, speaking of Paul Spatero, he was on last episode, and we talked about Defenders 99. And we got a good amount of feedback on that issue. Now, actually, we also talked about our histories of hunting for and finding comics to fill out our collections. And that is the part of the episode that TARDIS Rider had a thing or two to say about. The latest Quarterbin episode sums up my collecting, quote-unquote, philosophy well. I keep ongoing lists and scour cheap bins. Have completed large runs of Burn FF, Simonson Thor, Conan, etc. that way. The fun is in the hunt. Stick to the budget, mostly, and take your time. Agreed on all counts, TARDIS Rider. Be patient, and as you said, sometimes, as far as staying within your budget goes, mostly is about the best that we can do. Tim Price was excited to see this issue covered. I have this issue, maybe from a Whitman 3-pack. Nice, Tim, that's fun. Sir Martin of Grey commented as well. A guest, and what a treat. It's always lovely to hear from Paul. He's smart and has a splendid manner. His voice calm, but full of character. You are good too, Professor. Hey. What a great, fun issue from one of my favorite runs of Defenders. J.M. DeMatteis really brought some energy into a book that had been lackluster for a while. I always liked Perlin, and under the super sleek Sinnott, his work never looked better. Martin added that his favorite demon was the pink one with three eyes on stalks. What a cutie. Now, this is where Mart gets controversial. I have the opposite view to Paul, so far as the defensive lineup is concerned, crediting that expression, defensive lineup, to the excellent podcast, Tighten Up the Defense. It is possible that that is the first ever comment we've gotten that includes an editor's note. You'd think Sir Martin was a newspaper editor or something. For me, he continues, a definitive Defenders needs Stephen, Patsy, Kyle, and Val. Surfer is boring. Namor's pompous. And Hulk, look, actually, he's okay. He was always rather sweet in the Defenders, but I don't think he's essential. I do agree, though, that the Busiak-Larsen mini was great. Ditto the sequel, The Order, by Busiak, Mary Jo Duffy, Matt Haley, and Dan Jurgens. The only problem with this episode, Damien Hellstrom, Professor? It's Damon. Damon! Damien Hellstrom, as you said it, must be off on a team-up with Xantana. Sheesh. Again, let me emphasize this important fact about Sir Martin. Editor. Yep. podcasting's Michael Bailey, who I sincerely hope will have the opportunity to become DragonCon's Michael Bailey again later in the summer, wrote in as well. Professor Allen, for some reason, I completely forgot that this was going to be episode 150, and therefore, you were going to have the wise and wonderful Paul Spatero on. So that was a nice surprise. Paul is not only one of the nicest people I've met in podcasting and a good friend, but that man loves Bronze Age comics. Yes, Michael. Yes, he certainly does. I've always liked the concept of the Defenders. My reading experience is minimal, mostly in the 40s and 50s of that title. But I did go through some of the later run when it became a repository slash witness protection program for the original X-Men. That team was fun, but I have to agree with Paul that it kind of missed the magic of having Namor, Doctor Strange, the Hulk, and the Silver Surfer on a team together. The writing was decent, and the art was moody, but it felt like, well, it felt like a whole other team using the Defender's name. Then again, the Champions weren't setting the sales chart on fire in the mid-80s, and Team America was already in use. Maybe they could have been called Not the X-Men, but that doesn't really trip off the tongue either. You know, Michael, that is a problem that comic books at some point, maybe already, have to deal with, and that's that, have all the good and cool names been used up already? So you get a team that isn't really the Defenders, but sort of, and you can't come up with a new name for them, so maybe you just call them the Defenders? Also, Michael continues, I agree wholeheartedly with Paul that the Avengers titles of the past decade or so have made that team feel less special. Back in the 90s, one of my roommates and I got into a long discussion about how in the Marvel Universe, the X-Men were the arts kids, the theater kids, and the Avengers were the varsity athletes. It's not like the Avengers were inherently stuck up, but they were the big leagues. You needed to earn your spot. Once Marvel got into the shattering the toys mode, that went out the window, and suddenly the X-Men and the Avengers lost their identities as separate teams. It's probably why I lost interest in Marvel as a whole. Anyway, great episode as always. Looking forward to the next one, podcasting's Michael Bailey. Always appreciate your thoughts, Michael. I love the analogy of the theater kids versus the athletes. That makes a lot of sense, actually. And yes, even though I'm not an expert in Marvel history, it does certainly seem that every character has been an Avenger at one point or another, including Aunt May and Willie Lumpkin. And that does lessen the image. It does lower the standard of what it takes to make that team. If everyone's special, then nobody's special. Billy D from Into the Weird said it was a good episode and added this interesting bit. Herman and I will be covering this saga in the future. It's crazy. Well, Billy, I'm certainly glad that I snagged the book before you guys did, and I do certainly look forward to the upcoming detailed discussion of not just that issue, but the entire storyline. Manuel Carmona says he's always been intrigued by the Defenders, mostly because of my love for Valkyrie. But I do agree they seem to be a mismatch of heroes that seem like they don't really want to be on the team. I have a bunch of these books that I originally bought to hand out through my nonprofit, Comics for Christmas. But since I found doubles, I decided to keep some. They're hit and miss like every other book from that era. But I have to agree that as hit and miss as they are, those books are a far better read or deal than most of what's coming out nowadays from the big two. Keep up the great work, Professor. And as always, Hail Doom. And a hearty Hail Doom to you as well. Let me heartily recommend Manuel's charity Comics for Christmas, where the Carmonas give away comics during the holiday season at local community events. It's a great idea and a great effort. And in these days when we're all at home, burning through our to-read piles, with few new comics coming in, set aside some of those books, at least the more appropriate ones, for Comics for Christmas. Check out their Facebook page for all the info. Excellent work, Manuel, and thanks for the feedback. And we heard from Dr. Ange. And most of you already know this, but in case you don't, that is actual medical doctor, emergency room doc, Dr. Ange. And he called it a great episode. I bought Defenders 100 off the rack, my only Defenders comic ever. Even at that tender age, I knew the siren's call of an anniversary issue. I'll also say Defenders 100 was probably my first comic that had the Silver Surfer, Doctor Strange, and Clea. So this was a bit of a gateway to the Marvel U. I had met Namor and Nighthawk and a few others in different mags. I can remember thinking a young man's thoughts about Clea, even then. A comic crush which has lingered into my older years. I get that, Doc. As I've admitted on this podcast before, for me, that's the Scarlet Witch. But certainly, Hellcat, as an actual slinky, seductive demon, was also burned into my little Catholic brain even back then. I don't have the issue anymore. Part of a parental purge somewhere along the way. But parts of that story are definitely still in my memory. So I was thrilled to see you recovering this issue, the lead-in to that one. Great discussion. It sounds like a bonkers issue. As always, thanks for covering. Thank you, Ange. And speaking for all of us, we appreciate you. Stay calm, stay safe, stay wise. We need you, buddy. Social media love came from Sir Luke of the Upstate and Gene Hendricks, both from 22 Freaks. Sir I was Joe, Bill Bear from the Bat Pod, Old School Ross, Derek from the History of Comics on Film, Robert Ludwig, the most sane man among us, Mike from Comics in the Golden Age, Rob Myers from Everyone Loves the Drink, and Everyone Loves Young Justice, Pat from the Long Box Crusade, Kirk Spencer, Big Five Army, Burton, James Burton, Chris from Professor Frenzy, It's a Show, Who is Scorpio, We Love Comics, Michael Geist, Randy Watts, Michael Carlisle, James Williams, Chris Willett, Patrick R. Carey, and our listeners of the year, the Sutherlands, from such podcasts as Warlord Worlds, Trekker Talk, and the one I can't pronounce all that well. So let's take a break here, play a promo, and when we get back, we'll journey into the world of Hoopla Digital Comics and talk about Archie 101.
I hope he's home. Why does it sound like I'm using a phone in the UK?
I told you never to call me again.
Yeah, I know. And modern science has yet to create a device to measure how much I don't care. Look, I'm getting the trailer for this year's JL May together, and I assumed I had to make you a part of it since you're always in everybody's trailer or something.
Well, look at you, leading this year's JL May. Somebody's wearing his big boy pants. So, what's the theme?
I sent you an email like a month ago.
Like I even pay attention to anything you send me.
Countdown to Infinite Crisis.
Infinite Crisis?
No, Countdown to Infinite Crisis.
I'm not following.
Shocking. The theme this year, I'm talking to a child. The theme this year is Countdown to Infinite Crisis. I thought it was a fascinating time period in DC's history, so a bunch of us are getting together to talk about the various specials and miniseries and crossovers that led up to Infinite Crisis. It's the event before the event. The whole thing is going to kick off on April 30th, 2020, with a special episode of Views from the Long Box covering the Countdown to Infinite Crisis 80-page giant, and from there, a whole bunch of shows that I will be adding in post-production will discuss these previously mentioned miniseries and crossover issues.
And people actually agreed to this?
Shockingly, yes!
Well, it's probably a good thing that you're going to cover Countdown to Infinite Crisis instead of the Countdown series, because that was a train wreck.
Yeah, you know, actually, that was my thinking, too. Now, are you going to help me with this trailer or not?
Fine, I will help you with your little trailer.
Good. Don't worry, by the way. There won't be any dates for you to get wrong.
I hate you so much.
JL May 2020. Countdown to Infinite Crisis. The event before the event. This crossover kicks off on April 30th, 2020, on Views from the Long Box, and continues into Aquaman and Firestorm, The Fire and Water Podcast, Robin, Everyone Loves the Drake, Pop Culture Affidavit, It All Comes Back to Superman, The Fan Holes Podcast, Justice's First Dawn, The Birds of Prey Podcast, Married with Comics, The Coffee and Comics Podcast, The Long Box Crusade, Task Force X, Relatively Geeky Presents, Wonder Woman, Warrior for Peace, and the Dr. DC Podcast.
And we're back. Archie, 101, had a cover price of 10 cents, meaning I acquired this. Well, look, here's the thing. Remember about 6 or 8 episodes ago, I talked about possibly changing the quarter bin criteria for coverage on this show, and we came up with a bunch of potential options. You may recall, that was a very non-controversial episode, and much calm discussion followed. Everybody was 100% completely on board with this. Or possibly not. Well, our plan for the next 6 episodes or so, with the possible, hopeful, fingers-crossed interruption of Free Comic Book Day, but I doubt it, we are going to break our long-standing rules for this podcast. And in each of those 6 or 7 episodes, we'll do that rule-breaking in a different way. And to kick us off, we're going to look at books available via the free app Hoopla Digital. First, let me give you the sales pitch for Hoopla Digital and talk to you about how it works. This is not paid promotional sponsorship, although if this gets back to Hoopla, I'd be glad to have a chat with them. So the way Hoopla works, it is a two-step process. One, you need to have a library card from a public library. Two, that library has to participate or subscribe to Hoopla. The reason it's free to library patrons is that the library pays for their subscription, like they do for magazines or, you know, just for buying books. Many public libraries include, you know, Hoopla subscription as part of their annual budget. By the way, there are 2 main services that your library may have for this type of material, Hoopla and Overdrive. They are similar, though M is a bigger fan of Overdrive, which may have just changed their name to Libby. But I use Hoopla, so that's the process that I'm going to walk us through here. So you need the library card number from a participating library to activate the Hoopla Digital app. Again, all of this is free. Now, each library system has their own deal with Hoopla. I think Hoopla has different tiers of participation, different price points for the libraries. So the details that I'm going to go through are the ones that apply to the library system that I used for my membership, because I have 5 library cards, different counties and nearby locales. 4 of those had Hoopla access. I did check into each one, and the one that I use, Bexley Public Library, is the one with the best deal, the best selections, and the highest number of checkouts allowed. So the details, again, at your library might be a little bit different. Anyway, what I have access to as a user of Hoopla is a library of digital resources, including ebooks, audiobooks, music albums, movies, and comics. Remember that I just said that different libraries have different offerings? Well, one of the nearby library systems, when I checked out what they had on Hoopla, did not include the comics and graphic novels. So that library system was a hard pass. Now, the ones that I have allow for 10 borrows per month. Ebooks, audiobooks, and comics are 3-week borrows. Music and movies, I think, are 1 week. And this is set up using the structure of a traditional library. So items can be, if they're there to be checked out, they can be checked out. But you can't check out too many at the same time. I also suspect that the publishers are involved, go in and out of contract with Hoopla over time. So there may be things that I've seen and not checked out, and then later I couldn't find them. Or vice versa, things I've looked for and not found have shown up later. In the comics world, a lot of publishers are represented in Hoopla. There's not a lot of Marvel, and I suspect that the numbers of DCs may decrease over time, since both of those have digital apps of their own. They might pull back a bit. Of course, on the other hand, those two companies do actually sell a ton of physical trades to libraries, so they might not want to alienate such a big customer. But in terms of comics, Hoopla has a mix of trades and individual issues, including some that are available the same date as the physical issues. That's how I've read the recent 10th anniversary of Archie's The Married Life, as well as Valiant's new Dr. Mirage series. And some of the trades that they have on Hoopla are really big collections, more of the omnibus style. I've checked out ones with as many as 15, 18, 20 issues in them, though most are 4 or 5 or 6. And that doesn't even count the Archie 75th anniversary digital collections that sometimes had 1,000 pages. Such a deal. So like I said, I'm a fan of the app, especially in these quarantine-filled days of ours. And I'm pleased to share with you an issue that I checked out on the Hoopla digital app. So in terms of picking a particular issue for this episode, what I did was use an old-fashioned 6-sided die to make the choice. I picked 6 publishers that have large presences on Hoopla, in alphabetical order: Archie, Dark Horse, Dynamite, IDW, Image, and Valiant. And Archie came up. And then through a couple more rolls to narrow it all down, I ended up with Archie 101. And I know that this is a shocking revelation, but I actually got this book without paying anything for it, except for the taxes to support my local library. So that does count as a 100% discount off the original 10-cent price. I know, this is a dramatic change. I understand, covering a book here from a digital source. And I know that some of you may be getting the vapors right about now. So I just encourage everybody to take a break, count to 10, take deep, calming breaths, and let's talk about Archie 101. The cover shows Archie blushing a bit. With hearts surrounding his head, he asks Veronica, "If I tried to kiss you, would you yell for help?" Now look, that is awkward language, but I'm willing to give Archie credit for asking for consent, or at least the 1959 version of consent. Veronica, who looks... how would I describe that?
She is totally hot.
Thank you, Shag. Yes, that is quite accurate. Now, remember the setup for the joke. If I tried to kiss you, would you yell for help? And her punchline of an answer is, "I don't know. Do you think you'd need any?" Come on. That's pretty funny. Now let me talk about what's in this issue. I could only find credits for one of these stories, by the way. We start with a 6-pager to have and to hold. When Smithers tosses Archie out of Lodge Mansion and into the trash, Betty declares that he now belongs to her. That leads Veronica to declare herself a free agent in terms of dating, which Archie does not appreciate, but it does bring Reggie around Lodge Mansion to woo Veronica. And when Archie finds out about that, he heads to Veronica's and the boys throw down. And then Smithers throws both of those troublemakers into the trash. The end. After that, we have a 2-pager, Bats and Brawls, in which Reggie names his baseball bat after Veronica, and he takes it with him to the chocolate shop. A Jughead is in charge of the equipment for the team, and he wants to take the bat from Reggie for safekeeping. "Don't worry about old Veronica," he replies. "The lucky old bat is in safe hands." Which, unfortunately, Veronica overhears, misinterprets, and let's just say she does not look happy. The end. I've read a lot of Archie comics the last 5 or 10 years or so, and sports are a continual theme and have been since the earliest days of this title. It's mostly football, baseball, and basketball, but every other sport and outdoor activity that you can think of has been covered at one point or another. So it is fun to see a story hit on that pretty significant part of high school life. Next is another 6-pager. Circle Sail, written by Frank Doyle, penciled by Dan DiCarlo, and inked by Rudy Lapik. These credits are not in the original issue, but they were assigned to this story when it was reprinted at Archie Milestone's Jumbo Comics Digest number 4 in 2019. So in this one, Jughead buys up all the hula hoops in Riverdale, cornering the market, and then Archie and Reggie want a piece of the action. But this is all part of Jughead's plan, evidently, as he ends up with $5 in his pocket, which, by the way, is $45. Today's valuation? And Archie and Reggie each end up with a dozen or so unsellable hula hoops here at the end of this particular fad. I like that Jughead comes out financially way ahead on this one. Actually, Pop Tate comes out way ahead because that's where Juggy spends his $5. And in 1959, that meant a lot of burgers and shakes. We get to a house ad, which includes a coupon that allowed readers of the time to get the giant-size, fun-filled edition of Archie Annual No. 1 for the cool price of, you got it, for 25 cents. We then get an Archie's Fun page, which included a few puzzles and jokes and word games, that sort of thing. I am a dedicated fan of puzzles, and have run across a few good ones in Archie comic books before, but none of these ones jumped out at me as being particularly compelling. Next up is a four-page adventure fishy story, in which Archie blows a tire while he and Jughead are on their way to a fishing hole. Archie sends Jughead back to walk to town to get the tow truck, but on the way he decides to take a break, fish for a spell, and then eat his lunch and take a nap. I mean, Archie wouldn't mind, right? Well, Archie does mind the 4 hours that Jug has been gone, and then heads into town himself, only to find his buddy napping against the tree, with his fishing pole wedged under him and the line in the pond. Archie shakes him awake, and just as Arch was getting really mad, Jughead's line catches something, but it's not a fish, it's a tire. A tire that just happens to fit the jalopy. So they end up back at the chocolate shop, back as best friends. We follow that with the two-page Archie Club News, which actually paid kids to write in letters about their activities or their families or send in poems or jokes, that sort of thing. And the best ones won prizes ranging from $5 down to $1. Again, that would be about $45 to $10 back in these days. Imagine the pile of money that T.M. Maple or Dale Coe could have retired on if Superhero Comics had been offering that kind of pay for printed letters. I don't think there was another comic book that paid for letters. In this one, 6 letters were printed, and judging from their first names, which can be deceiving sometimes, it does appear, however, that 5 of those came from girls. And there's clearly an East Coast bias happening here, as 3 of the letters are from New York State, with one also from Pennsylvania and another from Massachusetts. The lone representative of not just the Midwest, but really the whole rest of the county, was the first place winner, earning a cool $5, Carol Clausen of Crown Point, Indiana. We then get to our last story, Teacher's Pest, a 6-pager in which Veronica is transferred out of Archie's class because he is a bit too distracted by her to concentrate. But Mr. Flutesnoot's class is all boys, and for that first day, they are on best behavior trying to impress Veronica. But Archie is a lovesick, blank-eyed zombie missing his girl so much, and Miss Grundy wants her back in her class. And Weatherby manages to do that, bringing Grundy's class back to normal. But now every boy in Flutesnoot's class is a lovesick, blank-eyed zombie. There were also a few pages of ads in this book beyond that one house that I mentioned, but Hoopla does not include those. Now, in terms of analyzing this issue, I want to talk in terms of my favorite story, funniest story, and funniest moment. And I think I'm going to differentiate between funniest story and favorite story. The funniest one was the first one, which starts with Archie being thrown out of Lodge Manor and ends with both Archie and Reggie being thrown out of Lodge Manor. In addition to that bit of humor, that mirroring of the beginning and the end of the story, the details of the story, including Betty's role, is hilarious. It's a very funny story. But my favorite story, which was also kind of funny, was Archie and Jughead at the fishing hole. Because it was kind of heartwarming, the friendship between the two boys. Because each character leans into their own personality, including their own weaknesses. And the trip itself is a disaster. But it ends on two happy notes. Fishing out the perfect tire for the jalopy, and ending up at the chocolate shop. It was a small story, just these two characters, but a great, great little story. Funniest moment? The cover joke, "Do you think you'd need help?" is a pretty great line. But I think the moment in the last story, where every boy in Mr. Flutesnoot's class is a glass-eyed, head-over-heels zombie, totally distracted for just having been in Veronica's presence for one day, let's just say I could identify with that feeling from back in high school. The verdict on Archie 101. Well, I didn't pay 25 cents for it, but it was definitely worth using one of my Hoopla credits for the month. As a matter of fact, if you find yourself in the presence of really cheap bins, 50 cents or three for a dollar or less, I'd suggest you spend a buck or two and grab some old Archies if they're in there. If you're used to modern comics, the fact that you can read it in about 5 minutes or so, well, look, you're kind of used to that already, right? I mean, that is the drawback to these humor comics and kids' comics. They take about as long to read as a modern-day Marvel book. And also, like a lot of comics, you might want to avoid the 90s for Archie. Ones from the 60s and 70s, and even into the 80s, are generally very funny. And the last 15 years or so, they've certainly expanded their line into non-traditional genres and went through a reboot or two, but the core traditional humor titles, they've gotten pretty good again. I mean, from maybe 2005 or so. So here's your homework. Go out, find a funny comic or two, and maybe you'll find them to be a nice change of pace. That wraps up my coverage of Archie 101, bringing episode 151 to a close. Next time, we're breaking another rule. And I'll be honest, we're breaking the fundamental main rule next time. So sit down, everybody, and prepare yourselves. We're looking at a book that I paid just over 33 cents for, from a $3 for $1 box at Carolina Comics and More. The issue will be JSA Classified Number 1, starring Power Girl, from DC Comics, cover dated September 2005. If you have any questions or comments about this issue or the episode, the Archie line of comics, me breaking my rules, or the podcast in general, feel free to contact me. Until next episode, I'm Professor Allen, and I'll see you in the quarter bin. The Quarterbin Podcast is part of the Relatively Geeky family of podcasts. Show notes and links are available at relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com, where the podcasts Uncovering the Bronze Age and Short Box Showcase also make their home. Links to Facebook and Twitter are there as well. Feedback for the show is welcome at relativelygeeky@gmail.com. And if you like what we've got going here, please leave a review and a rating in iTunes. It'll help more people discover the show. Thanks again for listening.